Why don't we get started? So much of the early stuff is just, fun.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right.
We're back in session. Carla, could you please read item 822?
Appeal of Raymond Burse Sr. and Raymond Burse Jr. against the hearing officer's decision to revoke the land use approval for a Type B accessory short-term rental use limited to 3 bedrooms and 6 guests within the existing house located at 2946 Northeast 9th Avenue, LU18-118-937-CU.
Very good. First, the city attorney will make some announcements about today's hearing. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. We will begin with a staff report by Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present his case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each of those persons will have 3 minutes to speak to the council. After that, council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, as we expect, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote, that would conclude the matter before council. I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing council today. First, the evidentiary record is closed. Again, this is an on-the-record hearing. It is to decide only if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. This means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the hearings officer. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. The council will not consider the new information, and it will be rejected in council's final decision. Second, if you believe a person who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence not in the record, you may object to that argument. And I'd also like to add that in order not to interrupt the hearing, I have asked folks who do want to object to talk to staff Marguerite Feuersanger rather than interrupting the hearing. Third, under state law, only issues raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to council. If you believe another person has raised issues today not raised before the hearings officer, you may object to council's consideration of that issue. And finally, the property owner must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval if the council were to amend or add conditions of approval. If they fail to raise such issues, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. That concludes my remarks.
Very good. Do any members of the council wish to declare a conflict of interest? No member of the council has declared a conflict of interest. Do any members of the council have ex parte contacts to declare information gathered outside of this hearing to disclose? Nobody does. Have any members of the council made any visits to the site involved in this matter? Nobody has made a visit to the site. Do the council members have any other matters that need to be discussed before we begin the hearing? I don't see any, so we'll start with the staff report. 10 minutes. Welcome. And the way I do this is I ask people to please stay within the required time limit, but if somebody needs to go over 30 seconds, a minute, I typically allow that, but then I give the other side the opportunity to also extend by the same amount of time, just so people understand that.
Thank you.
And that does not apply to the staff report. The staff report is separate.
Are we ready?
You're ready. You're good to go.
Well, good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, council members. My name is Marguerite Feuersanger, and next to me is Justin Lindley. We both work for the Bureau of Development Services. We are city planners working with the zoning code. I review, my main responsibility is to review land use proposals, and Justin focuses on enforcement. He investigates citizen complaints about violations of land use approvals. Whoa. So before you today, our discussion is really focused on zoning code enforcement. Before you is the property owner's appeal of a prior hearings officer decision to revoke or to take back a prior land use approval. The property owners are requesting that the city allow their accessory short-term rental, we call it ASTR, Airbnb, an ASTR use that was previously approved on the site. So this ASTR business has a 2-year history of repeat violations of the conditions of approval. BDS has substantial evidence of the violations, and we'll go over that later in our presentation. As a result of these repeat violations, BDS no longer has the confidence that the ASTR business will operate within the limits set by the original land use approval. And BDS did initiate the process to revoke the land use decision. This process is detailed in the zoning code, and it's designed to be a strong enforcement tool. So our staff presentation quickly is in 3 parts. I'll just go over the ASTR proposal and the rules, and then touch on the hearings officer findings, and then Justin will talk about BDS compliance. The site's in the Irvington neighborhood, Northeast 9th Avenue. It's just south of Fremont and a few blocks east of Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. The site is there in the blue square. It is rather in a sea of R5 zoning, single dwelling residential zoning. So ASTRs, what are they? The zoning code defines them as an individual or household group that resides in a dwelling unit and rents bedrooms to overnight guests on a short-term basis. But what's important here is that they're allowed in any dwelling unit as long as there is a long-term resident present. So the city allows ASTRs for good reasons, to promote efficient use of residential buildings, and also to provide an alternative form of lodging for visitors who want a residential setting. The zoning code does regulate them because they tend to have impacts on neighbors. These are guests or groups that are on vacation. They tend to be noisy. But the primary reasons for regulating them are to prevent them from detracting from the neighborhood character and ensure that the primary use of the site remains residential. Of note, the zoning code prohibits the commercial vacation rental, which is essentially a whole house rental, and there is no long-term tenant present. Here's a picture of the site and the house on Northeast 9th Avenue. So the zoning code regulates 2 types of ASTRs. The type A is 1 or 2 bedrooms, a rental in a house, and it's an administrative process. The type B requests 3, 4, or 5 bedroom, which this proposal fits into, is a conditional use or a land use review is required. Just want to make a note that site context plays an important role in the review of the conditional use. The prior land use approval conditional use was approved by the hearings officer for up to 3 bedrooms and up to 6 guests. Very important were conditions that were applied. They are essential to the ASTR being a good neighbor. They reduce the intensity of the use, and they minimize noise and late night impacts on the neighbors.
Could you please clarify type B specifically, type B?
It's a term that we use, a shorthand term. So a type B is where a resident or property owner wants to rent out either 3, 4, or 5 bedrooms in their dwelling unit. The type 1 is just 1 or 2, and that's an administrative process. There is a process that they have to go through, but it's not a land use review.
Thank you.
So the hearings officer decision to revoke the land use approval, the essential findings of the hearings officer was pointedly that the AST operator is legally obligated to follow the conditions of the land use approval. And the hearings officer's review of all evidence in the record The hearings officer found substantial and continued violations of 9 conditions of approval.
And when you say continued violations, what has to happen for a violation to be considered continuing?
I think that it's not just a one event. It happens over a course of time.
They've received notice prior?
Yes.
They've received some sort of a
yes.
formal notification?
Yes.
Okay.
And lastly, the hearings officer found that the zoning code reconsideration requirements were satisfied and the revocation of the land use approval is factually and legally warranted. So I'll turn it over to Justin.
Good afternoon, City Council members. My name again is Justin Lindley, and I'm a city planner with the Property Compliance Division at BDS. As mentioned, this property has had a history of short-term rental violations, which date back to the previous owner. Prior to the appellant's ownership, there were 2 separate violation cases for operating unpermitted short-term rentals at the house. A total of 4 citations were issued to the previous owner, totaling $35,000, which remains an unpaid lien balance. Since purchasing the property on October 27, 2017, the appellant has received 4 citations for the continued operation of unpermitted short-term rentals. These 4 citations total $53,000, which remains an unpaid lien balance. The property owner ceased operations in early 2018 and rented the home to a long-term renter, which allowed the BDS compliance case to be closed. The appellant then initiated a conditional use review application for a Type B short-term rental that is subject to the appeal. After approval of the Type B conditional use, multiple complaints were received alleging that the site was operating in gross violation of the conditions of approval. In response to these complaints, BDS staff met with the appellant and discussed all conditions of these complaints. BDS staff met with the appellant and that the conditions of Type B permit. After this meeting and in response to ongoing complaints and verified continued violations of the condition of approval, a notice of violation was issued to the operator in November of 2018. This notice outlined each condition of approval that was violated based on evidence collected at the time. In January of 2019, BDS compliance staff met with the appellant to discuss the notice of violation letter, the enforcement process, and options for compliance. The appellant stated that they would ensure compliance with all the conditions. Received complaint logs with date and time-stamped photographic evidence documented that violations continued at the property in February and March 2019, despite insurances from the appellant that all violations would be corrected. Based on continued evidence of ongoing violations, BDS initiated a hearing of the conditional use. Evidence of the violations collected during the investigation period was presented to the hearings officer at the reconsideration hearing, along with testimony from BDS staff, the operators, neighbors, and other concerned parties. The hearing officer found substantial evidence documented continued violations of the conditions. I will go over some of the evidence for the violations that had the greatest impact on the neighborhood and surrounding properties. Condition B1 relates to the number of guests per night and the maximum number of rooms that may be occupied. The rooms that were authorized for use as short-term rentals were 2 rooms located on the main floor and 1 room located on the second floor for a total of 3 rooms and up to 6 guests. No rooms in the basement were allowed to be rented to guests due to the impact it would have on the living arrangements of the long-term tenant and potential for a greater capacity at the house, which would increase the intensity of the use. Evidence collected during the investigation documented that the basement bedroom was used for guest stays and advertised as a bonus space on the Airbnb ad. The hearings officer found the multiple violations of this condition with the use of the basement bedroom and additional guests to be a substantial violation. Condition B2 attempts...
Could you go back one screen, please?
Yes.
That was just too fast. Okay, thank you.
Welcome. Condition B2 attempts to limit the impact on neighboring properties by imposing quiet hours and restricting the times the outdoor spaces are used. The exterior gathering spaces of the property are in close proximity to the neighboring houses and have the greatest impacts by short-term rental guests. This condition was imperative in reducing the impact the guests would have on the adjoining properties. Multiple violations of the conditions from various guest stays occurred. Many of these violations occurred with guests conducting parties lasting through the night and into the next morning. Additionally, violations of this condition were confirmed after the notice of reconsideration was mailed and prior to the May 15, 2019 reconsideration hearing. The hearings officer found that the violations were substantial. Condition B7 sought to mitigate the impact of guest access going from the driveway and using the side door directly adjacent to the neighboring property. During the conditional use review, the condition was proposed by the operator to mitigate the impact of the short-term rental guests would have on neighboring properties. This condition was never implemented by the appellant. The code entry to the house was on the side door. The hearings officer found substantial violations of the conditions. In conclusion, this site has had a continued history of violations with the short-term rental regulations. Despite the appellant's assurances of compliance throughout the conditional use review and enforcement case, the violations continued. Multiple opportunities were available for the operator to take corrective actions to implement and meet the conditions. Effort taken by the operator proved to be disingenuous. At no time was there an effort, such as providing an on-site manager, to enforce any conditions or address complaints from neighbors. The conditions set forth were essential in ensuring the accessory use of the house as a short-term rental to guests would have a minimal impact on the neighbors and surrounding properties. The conditions of approval that have and continue to be violated were authorized by a city code hearings officer through the afforded land use appeal process. No additional conditions can be implemented in this situation to ensure the compliance with the existing conditions. The reconsideration hearing found continued substantial violations of the conditions of approval and granted the revocation of the conditional use. We recommend the appeal be denied and that council uphold the hearings officer decision to revoke the conditional use.
To be clear, there is no owner-occupant, which is a violation of our short-term rental rules?
We were not able to confirm that.
Okay. Did the hearings officer address that?
The hearings officer did not address that.
With the type B, is that still a requirement that the dwelling is owner-occupied?
Yes, yep.
And the noise, the conditions on noise that you mentioned, that's standard citywide, 10 to, well, I think it's a 10 to 8 a.m., but ours is 10 to 7 a.m., 10 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Yep, so the noise condition was a little bit detailed. Because the outdoor decks were of such a concern during the hearings, the applicant proposed and the condition the hearings officer applied the condition that the outdoor deck use would stop at 7 p.m., which is earlier than typical.
Oh, I see.
So there's quiet hours, and then there's the actual use of the outdoor spaces.
So that slide went by a little fast. It was 7 p.m. to
10 a.m. No, 8 a.m.
Why don't you bring the slide up again so the commissioner can take a look at it?
Okay, will do. Thank you. I'd like to clarify the earlier question about owner-occupied. The dwelling unit with the ASTR does not need to be owner-occupied necessarily. It just has to have a long-term resident. And what we find is a lot of the ASTRs, the owners will assign or have another long-term resident that occupies a portion of the dwelling unit. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And was that looked into in this case?
Yes. They met the requirements, and there was a slide up that showed there was a long-term resident. This is from
There's been multiple long-term residents. We did have a family that was living in there from the period when the short-term rental ceased to when they received their conditional use permit. At the time that they received the conditional use permit, there was a new long-term tenant that was to reside at the property. We had received complaints that there was not a long-term resident at the site nor on-site manager. When we investigated that and looked into Yasmin Barghouti, who was listed as the occupant for the property or what would be the long-term resident, during her conversation, she said that she had ceased living at the house in October and was no longer the resident there. We then received a clarification from Raymond Burst Jr. that he was the resident, and so it would be owner-occupied, and that he'd been residing there since October.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. Could you, I understand part of the conditional use permit required front door entry for the guests of the what do we call it?
ASTR.
Thank you. Acronyms make me batty. And so from my reading of the hearings officer's statement, that was never done. So there was never a process that actually met that requirement for how guests would enter the location. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
And the reason given, I believe, was that, what was the reason given?
During the hearing, the appellants had argued that because of the historic nature of the door, that they could not move the key code from the side door to the front door, which is not correct.
That was going to be my next question. If you've had that experience in the past where that's been part of a conditional use permit and that was that condition was happened, right? So you said this is what you need to do, and those, mm-hmm. and so normally mm-hmm. that takes place?
Yes.
Very good. Does that conclude this panel? Very good. Next up, thank you for the report. Next up is the appellant. 10 minutes. If you could please identify yourself for the record, we'd appreciate it. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon. Hope you can hear me. I got a little hoarse voice. My name is Raymond M. Burse, and I own the property jointly with my son, Raymond Jr. Raymond Jr. was employed in Portland, has an undergraduate degree from Ohio State, graduate degrees from Indiana University Thunderbird School, and was here played for the Portland Timbers. Myself, I'm a Central College undergraduate, Harvard Law School, Rhodes Scholar, and we're both professional people. We've had problems with this site from the very beginning, starting with the application for permit, neighborhood objection at every stage. The permit was granted, and a neighbor with a neighborhood association showed then and continues to show intent to get rid of, no matter the method or the consequences, and sometimes even engaged in untruths, which has presented an environment not conducive to safe and livable neighborhoods. As an example, I point to three things. A camera mounted on a neighbor's house focused on the bedroom of the property in which we own. Daily log of each activity, everything that we've done has been logged. In fact, there was an air conditioner complaint made that the air conditioning unit was too loud, and the city came out and checked it. There was no problem. So any little nit, whatever you have it, comes there. And what has happened is the activity has empowered a neighbor and neighbors to complain, block, and destroy, not what you want and what you should support. And that is the reason we're here today. I heard earlier that there was a two-year period in which we have not been involved in the property for 2 years. It was acquired in October of 2017. The review notices that we got were brought to the review action.
Sir, did you take the property subject to the lien?
To which lien?
The prior lien that the Bureau of Development Services put on the property.
There was no lien on the property when we purchased it.
Okay.
So the review that was taken was broader than the notices. The violations gave us 30 days to correct the violation. And if we do the review included items not in the notices itself. There was, in fact, efforts made and corrections made, but no consideration by the staff or the hearing officer for action taken in response to the notices. And if you can read into the hearing officer's decision, the definition of substantial was used in different ways depending on what results was seeking to be achieved. In one instance, he dismisses our definition of substantial, but later in the hearing, the decision itself comes back to justify a conclusion what he was reaching for. The substantial violation, in our opinion, has not been improved because there's been a misapplication of the facts. In some instances, we were alleged to have done things which we did not do and did not. In fact, when we were owners present on the property, there have been complaints about us using our own property and the inability to do that. The hearing officer failed to review, use, and consider all of the evidence. And if you read through the hearing officer's decision, he makes reference that there are times where he considers this evidence but gives greater credence to a log of individual who was not necessarily gone through the rigors of that. There was over-reliance on proven discredited witness. And discredited witness, I say, is the witness who had the daily log in terms of things that she recorded, alleged to have occurred, that didn't occur. The hearing officer found that some conditions were not typical that were imposed on the property. And for instance, one was if you're going to be away from the property for 3 days or more, notify your neighbors. I don't know how many people are going to do that. And as I said, there was stated evidence not in the file by the hearing officer when, in fact, it was there. There were statements that were attributed that you, neither my son nor I, had said in the record what was, in fact, there. And when you review it, it was there. We also raised in the hearing a equal protection argument, which was not considered. Constitutional protections are available to all, and ours were dismissed outright by the hearing officer with no consideration. And what I mean by equal protection is that we be treated the same way as any other similarly situated individuals in regards to how we park cars in our driveway, in terms of how we enter our property. And what we have in fact is that from the equal protection is a property taken, our livelihood and ability to in fact maintain and own that property. All we ask is we use our property like others use theirs. This next item I hate to raise after having heard you the earlier session that you had. My son has raised on several occasions racial animus. His record shows that there has been no cooperation with neighbors as contemplated by the process. Not one time did any of them come to us and complain about anything that was going on. Their objective was to close it down, no matter what. The staff was put on notice regarding animus, and to our knowledge, no action to correct, counter this, or to take in consideration when reviewing complaint. There was a duties and responsibilities assignment sheet where I saw was put up, and who, and other than us, no one has lived up to those, never once contacted by a neighbor with a complaint. So from my standpoint, the decision is not supported by substantial evidence being relevant evidence as a reasonable mind might accept as adequate to support a conclusion, reasoning leading from the facts found to the conclusion drawn more than a scintilla but less than a preponderance, a case-by-case analysis requiring review of the whole record, relevant evidence. And when you look at that, what we have here is just sheer number and volumes of complaints being used as a guideline to, in fact, move forward with this. And the volume and the number of complaints was really by an uncredited neighbor, and that in itself is not substantial. To do so without more is dangerous, it's an unlawful taking, and the staff has relied on a lot of what the neighbor's complaints in terms without any independent validation by staff in terms of that. And you review that, they always cite what the neighbor said, but no validation in terms of going back to do that. In conclusion, I would say perfection is not possible. We made some mistakes, yes we did, but we also, when put on notice, took efforts to, in fact, to correct those. Perfection is an unreasonable standard. We took action. We fired the management company because they were allowing more folks into there than we had had done that. We appeared before, or at least tried to appear, the appearance and the function of the neighborhood has not changed by us being there. The use does not fully comply with the conditions of approval, but violations, correct those corrected after the notice letters, are not substantial enough to warrant revocation, and the use can comply with the original criteria if the conditions are met. And therefore, we ask that you reverse the decision and affirm the use permit.
Mayor.
Commissioner Fish.
So, sir, thank you very much for your presentation. And I understand from listening to your presentation that you have, in fact, preserved a number of constitutional issues that you may choose to take up. You've mentioned taking, you've mentioned equal protection, and you mentioned racial animus. And we, just to be clear, as a deliberative body reviewing the decision of the hearing officer, we're not really in a position to rule on a constitutional claim, but you have clearly put that in the record, so you have preserved your right to bring those claims in some other forum. How long have you owned the property?
Since October of 2017.
And since October of 2017, which is almost 2 years, what efforts have you made to relocate the keypad to the front door?
According to my son, when we originally was given the...
Okay, according to your son?
According to my son, okay, he was the one with charged with primary responsibility for doing
okay.
that,
okay?
Okay. According to him, he had locksmiths come to the property this sales, and given the historic nature of the door, they said they could not change that the door to put the keypad on the door itself, okay? And he failed to finish and complete that. He has subsequently put, and this was made told to the hearing officer, it has been corrected in terms of a padlock that's attached to, I guess, one of the seats or benches there that you now use combination to open the door, front door.
For the front door. So
yes.
you currently have a lock on the front
door? Yes, I do.
Okay. We had a slide earlier that you saw, sir, where some guests of the property referred to having as many as 10 people present. Do you acknowledge that during the period of time of your ownership, you've had more than six guests in the building?
According to the records, I think prior to December of 2017, there were, I think, four occasions where there were more than six guests.
Okay. And what steps have you taken to correct that?
We corrected the website itself, went in and corrected the website. We did that in terms of the rules. We also fired the management company who was responsible for the actual rental of the property.
Sir, there are apparently 16 conditions of approval on this property. Have you affirmatively taken any legal action to reduce any of those 16 conditions?
We mean affirmative legal action. I'm not understanding
the
question.
There are conditions on how this property can be used for an AST, what is it, ASTR?
Yeah, I know, yeah, ASTR.
I have the same problem with acronyms as my colleague. Have you affirmatively moved to set aside any of those conditions?
I guess I'm not understanding. In terms of addressing those issues,
right.
we have gone through the things that we need to do to address those issues in terms of our agreement with our rental agency, the things that we put on site, the rules and regulations for the operation of the property.
Right, but according to the timeline we were given earlier, sir, we have violations that are actually contemporaneous. So you've owned the property for 2 years, but there are some violations that have occurred fairly recently. So what, let me state it slightly differently. What's the current lien on the property?
What's the current what?
Lien on the property.
I don't know of any current lien on the property.
So the Bureau of Development Services and in our material says there's a $100,000 lien on the property. Is that?
Just under $100,000, sir.
You're not aware of that?
We're not aware of that. When we purchased the property, there was no lien, and we also had a title search and information done. None of that was a record.
Okay, but part of that lien has been applied since you purchased the property, and you're not aware of that?
No, I'm not. We didn't need notice of it.
Okay, I'm just going off of what was said in the presentation.
I do not know of any lien on the property that has been imposed for which we have an obligation.
So when you were presented at the hearing below with allegations of violations of conditions, did you present testimony rebutting the allegations of violations?
We presented testimony where we could rebut it. We acknowledged that in terms prior to then that there had been some violation, but we also contested the question of the notice was the 30 that we got. The notice of violation said you needed to correct these in 30 days. When you look at the record of things that were used, yeah, all those things required, most if not all of those, occurred prior to that notice. When you look at the period after, this is a different story.
Who is your current property manager?
It's been done by the Airbnb itself. Airbnb, the company itself, is doing it.
Airbnb itself?
Yes.
You do not have a property management company like a White Spider or some other company?
No, we don't. White Spider was who we terminated because they were responsible.
I understand you've terminated them. But now Airbnb does property management?
Airbnb is doing it, and they have local contractors in the community who, in fact, undertake all of those activities.
Okay. So I have some other questions, but I want to defer to my colleagues. But sir, I will say that we have been advised that you have a $100,000 lien on your property. I don't know what that property is worth. I assume, given the pictures of the property and the location, it's worth quite a lot. But I'm a little concerned that that's news to you because that's a substantial lien on your property already for alleged violations that have been put on the property, separate and apart from what we're here today to talk about.
Right, but I guess the question is what was the dates and when were those liens replaced? Because at the time that we purchased the property, there were no liens on the property.
Okay.
That title search showed that. In addition to that, since then, the notice of violation said that we had 30 days corrected and then said there would be some potential but nothing has ever been assessed or we've received any notice of it.
I'm just suggesting it's something you're going to want to look at
as
a separate matter. That's a substantial lien. And,
right.
And thank you very much.
Commissioner Hardesty, then Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Reviewing the hearings officer's documents, but let me go back before that. So there was a process where you went to obtain the permit in order to use this property as a ASTR or as a temporary rental, short-term rental property.
Correct.
And there were some very specific limitations that were set on this property based on its close proximity to neighbors. One example is the parking. There seems to be a long record of cars being parked in a driveway, even though the conditional permit actually said that cars would not be parked in the driveway.
It doesn't say cars would not be parked in the driveway. It says that you have to, in fact, cannot extend beyond 10 feet beyond from the property line itself, so in the actual driveway. And it's supposed to be limited to two cars.
Right.
Okay. Now, we have some people who have parked cars in there that's not on the 10 feet. When you look at the neighborhood and the way everybody else parks, people are parking are no different. So when I talk about having standards that apply to everybody,
right,
that should be one that applies to everybody.
Well, let me challenge that a little bit, sir. I think you're in a residential neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
So most people are parking based on their individual use of their house.
Mm-hmm.
So you have additional criteria placed on you because other people are coming and going at a regular basis.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I understand that.
Right? And so when you went to get the permit, there was a conversation about these are going to be the limits on how you can use this property if, in fact, you want to use it as a short-term rental property.
Huh.
And you agreed to that.
Yeah, we agreed to that. We also, those requirements were actually put in the rules for the use of the property that was given to the management company, given to people at the time that they rental, and then the rules that were on the property itself.
I understand, and of course, if you hire a management company, you have an expectation that they're going to do the job that you hire them to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, you have an obligation to make sure that the people you hired are doing the job that you're paying them to do, right?
Right.
And when you made that argument with the hearings officer, what the hearing officer said was the fact that the company that you hire did not do what you asked them to do is not an excuse for it not happening.
Right. It's not an excuse for it, but when we got notice of what was being done, we addressed it.
Well, I also noticed in the report that you agreed with most of what was laid out when the hearings officer was reviewing your conditional permit. You agreed that you had violations to the numbers of people. You agreed that you had violations to using the basement property.
Mm-hmm.
You agreed that you had violations for parking.
Mm-hmm.
You agreed that smoking was, in fact, taking place. You agreed people were using the outdoor balconies. And so let me just finish my, and then you can respond. I'm just trying to let you know that I have read all the documents that I have, and I've read your statements that affirmed many of the complaints that have been filed against you based on this conditional use, right? And so if you agree to all that, we had substantial, and I actually see it as substantial because it was just kind of an ongoing thing, right? There was a consistency of not actually implementing what you agreed to as the provisional use of this property. Do you agree with that?
In part, I agree with, and in part, I disagree with. We acknowledge and agree the things that we were going to provide, we were going to abide by. Okay? If you take the date of notice of violation, which was in December of 2017, and you look backwards from there, there were violations. It's hard to argue with that.
Right.
Okay? And I don't argue with that.
Right.
But what I do argue with is the notice said you had 30 days from here to do some correction, and we did some corrective action.
But was it enough for you to actually meet the requirement that was part of the conditional use? You did some things.
It wasn't perfection.
Well, I mean, I'm not asking for perfection. I'm just asking if you met the letter of what you agreed to do.
We tried, we attempted to, and from our perspective, we thought we were in compliance. We had some variations in there where people did things, but when you look at the number of people who were supposed to be in there, after that December the 30th, you know, we abided by that. The rules were put in as it relates to the cars. Part of the roles and responsibility document that we signed, or at least agreed to with, was that everybody had a responsibility and they were going to do that. Part of that responsibility was for if neighbors thought there were violations to, in fact, give us notice. Mm-hmm. They never gave us one single notice, one call, one anything.
So my last question, and because I know my other colleagues have questions as well, and so what did you do to proactively address the concerns that were being raised about the non-compliance with the conditional use of this property?
The notice that of non-compliance, which one I was of December 1st, was we went and changed the rules and regulations. We put those rules and regulations in place. We visited the property, and my son is here in the community looking at the property. We did all those things to, in fact, do that. And when we found people that were not doing it, we said, no, you couldn't be doing that. We even put into the rental agreement itself, if, in fact, you engage in some of those activities, you're going to be fined for being on the property.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I do have one more, and then I'm done for the moment. You said as of January, when did you get the notice?
We got it in, I guess, roughly December the 1st of 2017. No, 2017.
So this is a substantial list of violations that happened after that, starting on January 9th, 2019, going through April of 2019. And so there's a pretty long list.
There is a log, the list of a log generated primarily by one person.
Do you disagree that these violations were in fact happening?
Yeah, I disagree with it because I've never seen them or reviewed them or any of those things, nor have we ever had a conversation with her about violations. And further, she didn't want to have a conversation with us.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. When did you change the management company to Airbnb?
We did it in, I think it was February, when we finally got rid of it.
Of this year?
Yes, of this year.
Okay, so they didn't change, according to the records from Development Services and from the operator's guest log, they didn't change the listing until March?
Let me make certain on the dates. I think there's some confusion on the dates. We purchased the property in October of 2017. It was in December of 2018 that we got the notice of violation.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then there's BDS, Development Services documents, that the house rules and the narrative haven't been changed on the Airbnb listing?
It most certainly has been changed.
Well, it says it was changed on March 21st of this year, but not before that. And even
when we got the notice, we requested that it be changed, and we actually went on there and provided the actual language to the company that this was, in fact, to be done. And we know for a fact, based on the logs of the use of the property, that in fact there was no time after December where there were more than six guests on the property.
But there were the use of more than four bedrooms.
More than three.
Right. And the operator's logs talk about using the fourth bedroom and about having... Right.
And on that site, to get to the rules and the information, you had to click through some items. And I think based on what my son and I looked at, what was presented was they presented the front page of it, never clicked through to where the rules and all of that information was. That's what we saw when we looked at it.
So it would be helpful if staff have some screenshots of that that are in the record. I'd like to see what was listed as of both 1/23 19 and then 3/21 19. I don't know if that's in the record, but if it is, I'd like to see it, please. Because it seems like Airbnb has not paid attention to the conditions that you were given either, mm-hmm. that even though they're now responsible for it, which I'm kind of glad, they haven't acknowledged that there's a conditional use for this house.
According to my son, who's gone through it in detail, and he sent me some screenshots. I don't have those. I got them on my phone. In fact, it was changed. We showed the rules. And in fact, as an exhibit to one of our responses, we showed screenshots.
Okay. Thank you. We'll see if we can get that. Thank you so much.
Commissioner Udaly, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just taking a look at where the property is located. I want to sympathize with you, as it does seem like there's an extraordinary focus on this property in your neighborhood. And there may be racial issues at play. However, it's extremely rare for the city to revoke these permits. And this is an extraordinary number of complaints that's continued well into 2019. Too many occupants, people in an illegal basement bedroom. I'm unclear about the smoking rule. Is there a no smoking rule for, is that something? It's a limitation we put on the property, but it's not a limitation we put on anyone else's. Okay. There's a question of whether you have a long-term occupant. There's been repeated noise issues. And, you know, some of these complaints are, there was someone outside at 8:20 p.m. Honestly, that's beyond nitpicky, but there's also complaints of people being disruptive at 1, 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. It's a real problem having unattended hotels, essentially, in the middle of residential neighborhoods. And besides wanting to reduce the intensity and minimize the noise of on this property, we also have these rules in place to protect our rental market. Mm-hmm. Because every rental that's taken off the long-term rental market and put into short-term creates more pressure on our rental market, and we're in the midst of a housing crisis. So the question remains, is there a long-term occupant of your house?
The house, in terms of when it was set up, there was a young lady, my son, employed to, in fact, do that. She, in fact, moved out. It was here in Portland working and doing that. Lost his job in February of 18. So he is in Portland just about every week, every other week, to the house itself. So he's back and forth. And then he lives there when he's here.
What I'm unclear about, and maybe need to find out from staff, is that I know different types of buildings have different rules, but we have this rule that there needs to be a long-term occupant. Well, I'm unclear. I thought it was 9 months out of the year, it's owner-occupied. Is it any different for type B?
It's 270 days, so it doesn't have to be 9 consecutive months.
Right. Okay. That's all. Thank you.
All right, good. Thank you, sir. Okay. Next up are supporters of the appellant, and you'll have 3 minutes each, and I ask people, please keep it within 3 minutes, because we'll have to stop you at 3 minutes.
No one else signed up.
Very good. Opponents of the appeal, 3 minutes each. Same rules apply. And we need people's name for the record. We do not need your specific address.
We have 13 people signed up. The first three, please come on up.
Can I just make an observation? If
Commissioner
Fish. 13 people signed up, I just want to caution people, this is an on-the-record hearing, but if 13 people come and say a different variation of the same thing, that is not helpful to us as decision makers. So I'm hoping that it's 13 different pieces of testimony that are relevant to this. If not, we'd be happy to take a handful of representative speakers who are here to talk more generally. But if we spend the next 30, 40 minutes having everybody repeat themselves, I just want to caution, that does not help us as decision makers hear redundant testimony. So
it's also okay to come up and just say, I agree with what somebody else said, yeah, or whatever.
Or stand behind people as they
do. Yeah.
Could I just ask
Commissioner Fritz, then Commissioner Hardesty.
As the city attorney, often in these proceedings, we have a principal opponent who gets 15 minutes. Do we not do that in this case?
In this case, we do not have a principal opponent. Correct.
Thank you.
And I had a question for the attorney as well. My question is the appellate, is that the right term?
Appellate.
Is the appellate's son present?
No, he's not.
He's not. Because we had a lot of testimony based on what your son told you, so it's kind of hard to weigh what your son said if he's not in the room. And so I just want to put that on the record that I guess we will ask direction from legal counsel after we hear.
Well, public can I just jump in on that?
Please.
I mean, that's classic hearsay. And unless he did, he testify at the hearing below.
It's my
yes, he did.
Yes. So I want just without interrupting you, if you don't mind, because this is an on the record hearing, you're basing it on all the testimony that was before the hearings officer. Anyway, so I think what you would do is look at the hearings officer's decision and look if staff has information that was presented by the appellant at that time and could give you that information.
So, counsel, I have a follow-up question. I listened very carefully to the question and answers that questions that Commissioner Hardesty raised and the answers of the appellant. And I think it's fair to say, based on that exchange, that the appellant acknowledged virtually all the violations, but in the course of his presentation offered explanations such as, well, we had a property management agency that didn't do their job, or we had tenants that violated their lease agreement, their conditions of being on the property or whatever. I did not hear the appellant specifically say that on the vast majority of the so-called violations that he denied them. He said either they were the fault of others, or he said some steps have been taken to correct them. In light of that, is there a controversy before us?
The standards you have, and I think staff will go through in the staff memo what your options are. So
in the options, but if they have if the appellant has acknowledged that there were these violations, but has instead chosen to either argue that they are the result of someone else's failure to act, or that some action has been taken to correct them, is there a controversy in terms of findings of the hearing officer?
I think the answer is yes, because the standard is not was there a violation or was there not a violation, it's whether there was a substantial violation, and okay. So yes, there is. Okay.
So we have to judge the volume and the qualitative and the quantitative.
Yes, and I'd point out that the hearings officer includes a discussion of what the appellant's position was on whether they were substantial, and he chose to interpret the code in a particular way and determined they were.
Thank you very much. That's helpful.
And just again, before we get started, thank you for your patience. I'm noticing in the reconsideration documents that there are several Airbnb advertisements with house rules. So if staff needs to get them copied for us, you're welcome to go to my office and run some off.
Very good. Carla, how many? We have 13?
Yes.
First three, please.
Mm-hmm. First three, please come on up, are Bob Dobrich, Jim Barda, and Dean Griswold.
Good afternoon. Why don't we just start on this side over here, please?
Good. Great. No problem. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Robert Dobrich, Irvington in Portland. I am the current president of the Irvington Community Association. For context, the ICA represents all residents of Irvington, homeowners, renters, and businesses. All of our meetings of the ICA and all of our committees are open to the public, and all requests to speak are granted. In Irvington, there are over 100 permitted short-term rentals. The majority of these operate within the city guidelines and permit requirements. Unfortunately, the Whole House Vacation Rental at 2946 Northeast 9th is not one of them. As the record shows, there have been blatant disregard for the rules. In fact, the owners of 2946 Northeast 9th have been violating the rules for approximately 2 years. After the first hearing in August of 2018, the current owner, Mr. Burse, was granted a Type B permit with conditions. These conditions were not unreasonable, and they followed the city protocol and standards. However, these conditions were not followed with many egregious violations. Neighbors, not just those next door, continued to complain and document these violations. Since the city of Portland is complaint-based, it puts the onus of enforcement on the shoulders of the neighbors. The reported violations were captured in official complaint logs and filed with the Bureau of Development Services. These violations led to a revocation hearing in May of 2019. At that hearing, hearing officers Frank found that several substantial violations to the conditions of the permit and revoked the permit. In addition, Mr. Burse has repeatedly used intimidation tactics against his neighbors, including threats of police arrest, legal action, and verbal harassment. The ICA has fielded complaints from several neighbors regarding this whole house vacation rental. Contrary to Mr. Burse's assertion, not all of the neighbors were board members of the ICA. Mr. Burse has continued to say that race played a factor in these actions. I would not disagree that race has played a big part in Mr. Burse's life. However, I will emphatically testify that race had nothing to do with any complaint or action by the ICA. But let's bring it back to the facts. Mr. Burse purchased a property that already had violations of the short-term rental code. He chose to continue to operate the whole house vacation rental. He chose to not follow the conditions of the permit set forth by hearings officer Turner in August of 2018. He chose to simply ignore the rules set forth for its operation repeatedly and to this day. The result has been an impingement on the livability of long-term residents on both sides of the block and behind the subject property. In summary, the whole house vacation rental at 2946 Northeast 9th continues to operate with numerous violations of the permit condition and has generated countless complaints logged by several neighbors. It appears the operators are blatantly disregarding the permit requirements. As such, and based on all of the information in the record, I support the revocation of the permit. I cede the balance of my time to Dean Giswold. Thank you.
Thank you, and nobody can cede their time here.
Oh, okay.
It's 3 minutes per person.
Okay.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hello, my name is Jim Barta, and I'm in charge of code violations for the ICA Land Use Committee, ICA Urban Community Association. We've been tracking this matter since July 2017. The owners of the subject property are operating in violation of the code for more than 2 years. ICA filed a complaint on behalf of the neighbors in October 2017 after the initial complaint was closed in error. The owners finally filed for the required Type 2 permit in February 2018. They continue to operate the unlicensed STR during this time. The owners received staff approval for the Type 2 permit in June 2018. ICA appealed that approval. The unlicensed Airbnb continued to operate during that time. The ICA appeal was denied by the hearings officer in August 2018. The hearings officer approved the Type 2 STR with additional conditions, which we've heard about here. In October 2018, ICA filed a complaint that the owner was operating STR in violation of the August 2018 HO conditions, hearings officer conditions. Owner continued to operate STR in violation of conditions. Revocation hearing for the Type 2 was held May 15, 2019. Hearing officer decision after the hearing was revoked to Type 2 STR. Owner appealed the decision to council today. The owner continues to operate the STR in violation of the August 2018 hearings officer decision to this day. We ask the council to deny this appeal. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Dean Giswold. I support the revocation. I prepared and submitted a two-page rebuttal to the arguments of the owner. I'm not going to read it. Plus copies of the lists of violations, 7 pages, single-spaced, taken from the staff report, and the quoted findings regarding 9 of the 14 operating conditions which are in that attachment. You don't have to read the whole staff report. Let me summarize what happened after the owners filed for a B permit after operating without a permit for a significant period of time. The owners received approval from hearings officer Turner for a B permit for 3 rooms, up to 6 guests with 16 conditions. Owners object to these conditions now, but they did not appeal it. They had the right to appeal to LUBA, but they did not appeal it, and they should have done so if they objected to it. By city code, they must comply with all of these conditions, whether they feel it's fair or unusual at this point. The violations then continued on. Since Portland has instituted a resident complaint-driven enforcement process, the neighbors in the ICA did what the city requires and filed complaints. The neighbors filed complaints using forms and pursuant to the instructions from the city, and in some cases even provided pictures. They filed periodic logs each week, week after week, month after month. All these logs for the relevant times are in the record. The violations, nonetheless, continued and the complaints logs were filed again and again. A hearing was scheduled for May 15, 2019, and a staff report that contained the 7 pages of violations was sent to all parties, including the owners, Mr. Burse Sr. and Mr. Burse Jr. Owners received notice of these violations. They received notices in November and December of other violations, and the hearings officer Frank found that the city gave all the required notices. Please note that most of the B1 violations were from the owner's own guest log, who wrote in there how many guests, how many rooms, how good it was that they were there. The revocation hearing was held, and on June 21, hearings officer Frank found that there was substantial evidence of numerous violations of 9 of the 14 operating conditions and ordered a revocation. But the violations continued and the complaint logs had been filed up until last week. The owners appealed and here we are. I ask you, as the others have, approve the decision of the hearings officer and support the efforts of the residents to follow the city requirements, and the revocation decision should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you. Next three, please, Carla.
Are Barbara Nagel, Richard Flaggy, and Lily Copenagel.
Good afternoon. Would you like to start, please?
Good afternoon. Thank you. I would. My name is Lily Copenagel, and I am the daughter of Barbara Nagel and Richard Plagi. I'm testifying today because in the course of assisting the city in gathering information about violations of a short-term rental permit, they have been threatened and accused of racism by the property investors who own the short-term rental next door to their house. The threats were frightening, but the accusations of racism were what hurt us the most. The influence of racism, and in particular as it relates to housing and businesses, is very real and very serious. And you don't know my parents, and you don't live on our block, so I want to share with you some of the history that might help you evaluate those accusations. My family moved to our neighborhood when I was less than a year old. I went to neighborhood school, and I grew up with the neighboring kids. In our inner northeast Portland neighborhood, race, racism, and Portland's history with the black community are a big part of our collective conversation. And in our house, we discuss this history and the ways in which it impacts the day-to-day lives of our friends and neighbors. My parents are deeply committed with an unflinching humility and honesty about the privilege that we enjoy as white people and our role in fighting against the systems that exclude and discriminate. But they don't just talk about it, they showed me with their actions. My family could have left our neighborhood at any time in the last 44 years. In fact, many factors have made it challenging for them to stay. But they chose to stay in part because of their lasting and deep relationship with the neighborhood and the connections that we have there. They have helped the long-term residents as they have aged and encouraged them to stay. They have watched with sadness as many of our long-term residents have left the neighborhood and the neighborhood has gentrified. I am a product of their house, and my experiences growing up in the diverse community of our neighborhood. I have dedicated my career to exposing the ways in which race and gender disparities impact our communities. I work with several local organizations and government agencies, such as the Coalition of Black Men, the National Association of Minority Contractors Oregon, and even the City of Portland, to provide transparency and accountability in the Portland business community, and to help the residents of the Portland area understand the impacts that discrimination and bias has on us as a city. While I have no doubt that Mr. Burse Jr. and Mr. Burse Sr. are impacted every day of their lives by the culture of exclusion and oppression that we live in today, I hope that this helps to make an informed decision of the history on our block and my family's commitment to a diverse and healthy Portland. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
I'm Barbara Nagel. I live at 2938 Northeast 9th. My husband, Richard Plagge, and I have lived there for 44 years. Through the years, we've had warm, positive relationships on our street. We've always been committed to Portland's strong, diverse, inclusive neighborhoods. We appreciate the Burse's concern about racism. We, too, are concerned about racism in our community. It means a great deal to us, and so I state clearly and sincerely, to attribute our complaints to racism is an abuse of the word. Our complaints have nothing to do with race. We're both retired, and although we both have volunteer obligations, we're home a lot, and we do a lot of our own maintenance, so we're outside a lot. We're especially aware of what happens next door at 2946. The driveway passes 5 feet away under our bedroom window, and the back deck is 5 feet from our garden. We see and hear almost every person and car that enters that driveway. There is no barrier between our house and that driveway. Sometimes the guests are considerate, and then there are those who party until the morning hours, run enthusiastic team-building retreats, use foul language, urinate on the fence separating our backyards, or barbecue on the deck after midnight. We're awakened at all hours as guests come and go, greet each other in the excitement of their vacation, and drag their suitcases down the driveway to the back door. We hear it all from our bedroom above, especially in the summer months. We understand it. They're on vacation, eager to have a good time in the motel they've rented. This whole house rental started in January of 2017 under the prior owner without a permit. We complained to her and then to the city in 2017 before Mr. Burse was the owner. We complained to Airbnb. Our last notice from Mr. Burse says Yasmin Barghouti still lives there. She doesn't, never did. Why would we call her? None of our concerns have been addressed. The city only accepts complaints with documenting timestamp photos. On the day of the hearing in July 2018, Mr. Burse Jr. called the police, claiming my husband was harassing his guests. Richard's crime was that he had taken photos of guest trucks blocking the street. Mr. Burse Jr. then emailed our neighbors saying that they shouldn't communicate with us because we were under police investigation. As noted by BDS at the July hearing, this was not true. The complaints with photos are our only tool. We've submitted 19 citizen complaint logs with 167 photos. The evidence shows the flagrant, serial, proven, dishonest management of this enterprise in spite of multiple opportunities to comply. We are deeply affected by those unsupervised activities. We can't capture all of it on complaint logs. We're no longer comfortable entertaining in our garden. We don't allow our grandniece or my 95-year-old mother in the garden alone. We dread the better weather because it brings out the worst. Mr. Burse claims he's corrected the problems, but he hasn't.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi. Yes, my name is Richard Plagi. I live in the house next door, too. The house is advertised as a whole house rental, and it is rented almost every day. On July 28th, the owners listed it for 12 guests, defying the permit's six-person limit. Here's a screenshot. City code explicitly prohibits full-time short-term rentals and requires that someone live there at least 270 days of the year. Mr. Bruce Jr. claims he lives there, BDS exhibits 25 C and D, but he doesn't, and he never has. On July 22nd, Mr. Bruce Jr. informed the Washington County Courts that he lives in South Carolina and that when he exercises his parental rights in Oregon, he stays with his girlfriend on Murray Road in Beaverton. And here's the court record. His LinkedIn page says his real estate.
Can I ask a question of legal counsel? Is that already included
so
in the
I'm
record?
I'm trying to figure out the date. So I want to make sure that the people testifying understand that this is limited to the record in front of the hearings officer. The hearings officer hearing was on May 15th of this year. So I don't believe, unless somebody else tells me I'm wrong, anything after May 15, 2019. When was the record closed? The record was closed May 22nd for new evidence.
Okay.
So I, if there is new evidence coming in, and I'm keeping a list of some things I've heard that might be, but this might be better to stop because it sounds like it's definitely
new. And counsel, if I could also just add.
Commissioner Fish.
The appellant has already testified that his son lives somewhere else, that he is an occasional visitor to Portland, that he may on occasion stay at the house, but there has been no representation that there's someone currently living there 270 days a year. So just to be clear, I think that's already been established in the colloquy between Commissioner Hardesty and the appellant.
Right, and not to cut anybody off, but this is a legal hearing, and therefore we have to stick to the record as it currently
exists.
That's
fine. Thank you for explaining.
Okay. Let's start here.
Yeah.
Our only respite in the past 2 years was February to July of 2018, when the Freemans, an African-American family displaced by a fire, rented the house. They were considerate, responsible neighbors, but Mr. Burse raised their rent from $4,000 to $6,000 a month, saying he could make a lot more money renting it on Airbnb. The Freemans left, and we were sad to see them go. We recognize the merits of alternative housing, and there are many models on our street, but there must be limits that respect livability for all. We have a right to enjoy our homes. We accepted the conditional use permit because it set reasonable limits, but with no on-site resident, unsupervised guests continue to violate the permit. We support the city's efforts to prevent unsupervised motels like this. This is not a home. It's an investment company's low overhead motel in a residential neighborhood. Everything the city claims it wants to avoid. It displaces long-term residents and exacerbates our housing crisis. This is not about the investors who own 2946. It's about the livability of our city. For over 2 years, we've tried to find relief to once again fully enjoy our home. Condition number 16 of the August 2018 decision says, any but the most minor violations should be grounds for revocation. We need relief now. We plead for immediate revocation.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you. Next three, please, Carla.
Our Karen Diora, James Stevens on behalf of Carolyn Dasher, and Kate Bloom.
Good afternoon. Would you like to go ahead and start, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
My name is Kate Bloom. I live at 2947 Northeast 10th Avenue, the house that is directly behind the house in question with the Airbnb. I have seen many Airbnb users being rowdy and partying past 10 a.m. The smoke, both from marijuana and tobacco products, both fills my window as I face that my bedroom faces directly their outside living area that was not allowed to be that they weren't allowed to be out past 7 o'clock, which they were. And on top of that, I have never seen a full-time resident whose job was to watch the house within the property. On top of that, my family also has trouble spending their dinners outside due to the noise and the smoking that we have to endure and have when we have family gatherings.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
My name is James Stevens, and I'm reading a letter from Carolyn Dasher, a neighbor who's not able to be here. In their narrative of support of appeal, the operators imply that the complaints of a single neighbor are behind the revocation of the permit. This is untrue. The northwest corner of my property touches the southeast corner of the operator's property. Their deck overlooks my patio and is probably about 25 feet, if that, from my actual house. So we definitely are impacted by what goes on this property. At the recommendation of BDS, we have submitted a number of complaint logs regarding noise, partying, and after permitted hours deck usage. While we have not been as strongly impacted as the neighbors immediately next door to the property, we are just as tired as they are of having to yell at tourists who take their noise inside in the small hours in the morning, and in fact, they have had to submit additional complaint logs to BDS since the June 21st, 2019 decision. On weekends, perhaps because the operators assume no one at the city will be checking their Airbnb listing, then the operators change their Airbnb listing by increasing the number of guests allowed to 12. On Monday, they change the listing back to 6 guests, the maximum allowed per conditions B1 and B10 at the ASTR permit. The operators still have not provided an on-site manager for this property. condition B13 of the ASTR permit. Neither of the Burses reside there. Their property essentially functions as an unstaffed hotel. This leaves managing noise in the hands of us neighbors. Based on the operator's historic lack of interest in solving these problems and the fact that Mr. Burse Jr. has called the police on neighbors who have complained, we have no confidence that they will suddenly become responsive to our concerns. The operators have shown repeatedly that they are unwilling to operate this property in adherence with the conditions of their ASTRB permit. We strongly urge that you maintain the revocation of the ASTR permit for 2936 Northeast 9th Avenue.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Karen Dayora. I'm here to speak in support of Barbara Nagel and Richard Plagge. I lived across the street from them and the Burse property for 21 years. I know the neighborhood well. I've written letters, made phone calls, and spoken to Ray Jr. in opposition to the conversion of this family residence into a profit-making business. I'm not a member of the neighborhood association. Those of us in opposition don't want a business there that allows 12 strangers to arrive and depart every couple days, people who have no interest in us as neighbors. It has been very disruptive in many ways. However, we do value diversity. In 1975, when Barbara and Richard moved to this street, it was mostly inhabited by African-American families. That's why they wanted to live there. Being avid supporters of social justice issues, they didn't want their daughter to grow up in a predominantly white neighborhood. Their neighbors on one side were a refugee family from Eritrea, and Barbara and Richard are still their friends, an older couple across the street and my next-door neighbors until they both passed away. Were also Barbara and Richard's friends. When his wife died, he was all alone, only nieces and no children. And I'd see Barbara bringing him food, she's a great cook, and Richard would go and sit with him to watch his favorite games on TV. These are only a few examples of the kindness and generosity which I admired and also received from them over the years. When I heard that Ray Jr. accused two of the families in our neighborhood of being racist, I was surprised. I don't fault him for assuming that. Portland is well known for its racism. But these two families hadn't known that the new owners were African American. If Ray Burse Jr. and his family would have moved into this house, they would have been welcomed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, all three. Next three, please, Carla.
All right, Nikki Johnston, Helen Mushi, and James Posey.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Nicolette Johnston, and I'm here as a citizen in this process. By way of disclosure, I sit on the Irvington Land Use Committee. The cost of this Type B accessory short-term rental process is being borne by the taxpayers. Not only the time that city staffers Margaret Singer and Justin Lindley have put into this particular situation, but also not one, but two hearings officers that taxpayers have paid for, and now this appeal to you. If the appellant had simply followed the ASTR requirements like everyone else, we wouldn't be here today. In my opinion, appellant doesn't want to comply with ASTR requirements, or they would have done so ages ago. Stop history from repeating itself, please. Enough is enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Council, Mayor. My name is James Posey. I think most of you all know me. I've been in the community. I live down the street from the residence on the other side of MLK. I live in lower, Elliott neighborhood. I'm here because when Lily Copenhagen told me about the issue and the spectrum of race was raised in this particular circumstance, I was offended because when an outfit or an appellant or anybody raises the spectrum of race, then it becomes a different ball game and everybody knows it. And so I'm concerned that whole issue of racism in this matter is being inappropriately and outrageously used in a way that doesn't serve us well in this community. We know there's racism in this community. You all know I'm no patsy when it comes to talking about racism and how it affects our community, but this particular case is outrageous. When a person doesn't get what they want, they start throwing the race card. That's outrageous, because it lessens all that we do to try to change the situation in our community. I got to tell you, after listening to the testimony, if this person or this house was down the street from me, I'd be raising hell. I'd be in here screaming at you all every day until you got rid of them. We've got kids in our neighborhood. We've got old people in our neighborhood. We just can't have that kind of mess going on where parties and smoking and carousing. You know, these communities are already disrupted enough with the many changes, homeless and so on, et cetera. So I'm saying to you all, divorce yourself from the concept of racism in this matter and look at the merits. Look at what people are saying. Look at the evidence. Don't let somebody come here and spew the concept of racism. And people will basically transit to our community, by the way, transit to our community, and let them influence your decision on how you look at this matter and the people in this community. Thank you very much for allowing me to talk to you today.
Thank you.
Thanks,
both of you.
And the last person I have is Greg Snyder.
Is it 13 people already?
I think one fell out. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Greg, is there anything that's been said that you have not had a chance to address?
I am last but late, not least. I will make my testimony short because many of the things I do say I've put in the record already in the hearings officer plus the conditional use. But I'll say, Mayor and Council, when are we going to crack down on illegal Airbnbs? How many thousands of Airbnbs do we have in the city that are not following the rules that you set out? And yet here we are trying to follow the process, trying to say, look, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem, only to have it thrown back in our faces as citizen enforcers. We're doing the only thing we can, and that is to take it to Bureau of Development Services in a systematic way to try to document what's happening. We need real leadership. We need real policy change. We need a crackdown on illegal Airbnbs in this city, and I don't know what it's going to take, but this is a wake-up call to that effect. So please, I implore you, now is the time to make policy to get rid of illegal Airbnbs in the city of Portland. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next up, and that concludes, Carla, the opponents of the, or excuse me, the yeah, the opponents of the appeal, correct?
That's all who signed up, correct.
Okay, next, if you so choose, Mr. Bursch, you have the opportunity to rebut. This is the appellant's rebuttal. You have up to 5 minutes.
Mr. Bursch, while you're collecting your thoughts, and this won't be charged against your time, I have a couple of questions that would help me. Where do you live, sir?
I live in Prospect, Kentucky.
Excuse me?
Prospect, Kentucky.
And how often are you in Portland?
I have a grandson here. I'm here 4 to 5 times a year myself. My son is here every other weekend.
And what's his domicile?
He still claims Portland. He's working out of South Carolina and also out of Dayton, Ohio, for that's the company they have been moving around.
Okay, and sir, is there someone currently in this house on Northeast 9th Avenue who lives at least 270 days a year and is your agent?
And is my agent, you said?
Correct.
My son, you know, based on the calculation of
okay,
the number
maybe,
of days.
Let me state my question again. Is there someone living in the house at least 270 days a year who meets the code requirement of having a full-time occupant of the house separate and apart from people you rent to? It's a yes or a no.
No, but he calculates that he's here 270 days a year.
That doesn't mean he lives in the house.
Okay, sir.
Yeah.
And but my final question is, we have a couple of exhibits that list complaints that can be brought against tenants for violations of the rules, and it says that there's a mandatory walkthrough if there's an allegation of a complaint. Who does the mandatory walkthrough?
It is done by the management company, put folks to walk through. My son also walks through those properties.
And how many times has the management company done a walkthrough with one of your tenants?
With one of the tenants? They charged us to do it on a regular routine basis.
No, I'm talking about when there's a complaint brought against the tenant. How many times has your managing agent, this is Airbnb, done a walkthrough of the property?
We haven't had a complaint against a tenant. Actual complaint.
Thank you.
And that's part of one of the points that I was making earlier, is that there have been several complaints, but none of those to us, for us to address, or for the management company to address. There's been no outreach, no contact whatsoever.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. You know, as I've sat there and listened to a number of things in terms of what people have said, it's still my position that a substantial violation has not been proven. And we have not operated an illegal Airbnb. But according to the rules, we have a permit for what has been operated there and continue to be operated there. We submit that we heard from the president of the ICA, who said that they had been open and willing to, in fact, meet with us in regards to things. The record, if you review it, shows that they have not met, not made the opportunity, nor provided any notice to anyone. They've kept a record and log of complaints, but nobody has complained directly to the owners or to the property. There was, in fact, phone numbers, email addresses provided, and no time was, in fact, anything done to in fact, do that. Had we been told of some of these things, it was fine. We would have done something. After the December 1, 2018 notice, we took action. And I think what we're saying is that if you look at some of the facts, and many of them, that there was a misapplication of the facts in the hearing officer's report. And in that regard, there are several things in terms of misstatement. He states that there was no evidence in there in regards to in regards to the rules and regulations. Before those rules and regulations were in fact posted, they were in fact shown to BDS in terms of what we were proposing to do, and in fact that's what we end up doing. We said that in fact, you know, granted, you know, there's been a parade of folks in terms of number, but the primary person who has been on in regards to all of this has never reached across the 5 feet in the driveway to say, I've got a concern, I've got a problem, how do you help me and how do you do that? The hearing officer also found that there were some conditions that were not typical, meaning they wasn't consistent with what has been done in the past. I mean, even though they were not there, there was nothing that he could in fact do about that. So, in fact, an undue and unfair burden was, in fact, placed upon us in terms of doing some things. When we got the notice again, it took place. We did the things that we needed to do. We're not saying that, oh, someone else didn't do what they wanted, they needed to do. What we said is what we did to, in fact, address and do the things that we needed to do. And we have done that. Hearing also stated in many instances that there was evidence not in the file, and when in fact it was there, in terms of giving and saying that we things that we had said and not done, we're not there. And if you look at it, you know, in terms of one of the ones that he said was there in terms of the ICA notice, and in terms of that was not there. We spoke to him also regarding the how individuals distinguish between who was in fact a residence of the neighbor of the home versus who was in fact an Airbnb tenant in there, and she could not, and they could not distinguish between them, but because they were in fact there, his assumption was it was everything applied to everybody. You know, we are, as I said earlier, we're far from perfect, didn't do perfect in terms of doing that, but we've tried our best to, in fact, be hospitable and good neighbors and to work towards trying to make this situation work. But in order to make things work, you had to have people working with you. And I think it ought to be very clear to you that there was no inclination or desire on the other side at any point to work with us, to notify us, to do any of those things. It was more bent on they have to go, and we seem to be the point for a much larger issue, a larger discussion that is taking place. So thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Fritz, you had some questions.
So I'm just trying, I appreciate staff getting me Airbnb screenshots from March, January, and the latest is April 17th of this year. And it lists six guests, but five beds. And when you look over where the beds are, there's a bed, a king bed in the master suite, a queen bed in the guest bedroom, and a queen bed in the second guest bedroom. So that's not five beds. So it kind of implies that the bonus room or the downstairs is also being allowed. Mm-hmm. My question for you, sir, is it says there's a six guest minimum on weekends during summer and 4 months. When I saw that in the record, I thought that must be a typo, that they meant maximum, but...
I think it's a typo.
Well, it's throughout this listing, and it's throughout all of the listings, is that there's a minimum. Yeah. Is there a per-person charge on this rental?
No, only six guests are allowable in the unit itself. I think when they did the revision, it should have been six max, not six minimum.
That doesn't make sense because it says this home has a four guest and four night minimum on all holidays and three night weekends, mm-hmm. and a six mm-hmm. guest mm-hmm. on weekends during the mm-hmm. summer and 4 months.
Right.
So that doesn't make sense to exchange the word minimum with maximum.
Well, what you have is, in terms of the, what you're stating is for the week, for those weekends and for the summer months, what you're expecting is six guests to be there. You're not going to put any more in than that, but if someone wants to rent the property, it's got to be for six guests, and they get charged for six guests.
And why do you only have four guests on holidays and weekend, and holidays and... Yeah, why only four on holidays, if that's the case, if this is supposed to say maximum, but it meant minimum?
Unartful language, I would say.
Even after the management company has changed, it's really unclear that there is a maximum.
Yeah. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, I would like to
bring a motion.
I'd like to bring a motion to deny the appellate's appeal.
Second.
Uphold the hearing officer's decision.
And to uphold the hearing officer's decision.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty.
I'd like to speak in favor of the motion.
To deny the appeal, uphold the hearings officer decision, and revoke the conditional use permit. Second from Commissioner Udaly, Commissioner Fish.
This is a tentative decision, but I think based on all of the evidence that we've heard and the evidence in the record, there is substantial evidence of chronic and continuing violations at this site. And I think it is appropriate for us to finally, once and for all, drop the hammer.
Commissioner Fritz.
I was just wanting the city attorney to weigh in as to the proper process here.
I appreciated Commissioner Fish mentioning that it would be a tentative vote. I think it's important in this case, although we would, depending on council's ultimate vote, it would be good to act quickly. I think it's more important to make sure that the findings reflect the discussion that happened today, and also to make sure we're clarifying that there were some pieces of new evidence, and I think the findings can reflect that new evidence was not considered by council in its decision.
Could we have findings in 3 weeks?
I think the dates that, and may we discuss that after, I don't want to interrupt deliberations any longer, could we discuss that?
So take a tentative vote and then figure out when it comes back to council?
Yes.
So Mayor, I move the vote.
Any further discussion? Call the roll.
Hardesty?
I just want to say that I know that we live in a community that has suffered from deep gentrification, from racial tension, and racial inequality. And I just want the record to reflect that I'm appalled when race is used in a way as a hammer and as an excuse for non-action. I vote yes in favor of this motion.
Lindley, are we good, Lindley, then?
It's a tentative vote.
It's a tentative vote.
We're just taking a tentative vote.
All right. You, Daly.
I agree with Commissioner Hardesty. When I looked up this residence, I realized I lived on this street in 2007 for a year, so I can attest to kind of the character of the neighborhood. It's quiet. It's very residential. It doesn't ends into the park. It's a street where kids could probably safely play in the street, however, not with dozens of people that aren't invested in the neighborhood coming and going and treating it as a hotel. I've made up an alternate slogan for Airbnb, which I can't say because of our FCC regulations, but I'll modify it. It's live like a local and not care about your neighbors. And sir, you have complained that these individuals never spoke to you directly, didn't reach across the driveway. They reached across the driveway. They wouldn't know who they would find. You were not the neighborhood. And although on our website we do encourage neighbors of Airbnbs to talk first to the owner, you're not present. The next alternative would be neighborhood mediation. Again, how do you go through a mediation process with an absentee landlord? And finally, they are absolutely entitled to submit a complaint to BDS enforcement program. And I don't know this gentleman's name, but I have had the same question. It's been a huge frustration to me, our inability to enforce on illegal Airbnbs. And today I think we have seen how incredibly difficult, time-consuming, and expensive it is, and it's not fair that the responsibility falls upon neighbors and the cost falls upon the city. We shouldn't have to pay for Airbnbs and allowing people to illegally operate in our city and or the illegal operations of hosts. This is an extraordinary case with an extraordinary number of violations. I was completely not compelled by the argument for the appeal, and I vote. This is always confusing to me, every single time. Just want to make sure. Yeah, I am voting aye, yes.
Fritz.
The folks testifying in opposition noted that there are over 100 rentals, short-term rentals in the Irvington Community Association's district. This is the first one that we have heard of them taking issue with. There may be others, but that's why we set up the short-term rental program, was so that community members could have some input into the kinds of activity. I agree with hearings officer Greg Frank that the previous hearings officer's conditions of approval were somewhat unusual and in some cases I thought excessive. However, the time to appeal those conditions was back in 2018, and we are charged now with, were those conditions upheld? I don't have the record for that hearing, so I don't know why those conditions were imposed, and I'm going to trust our city's process that they were imposed because of concerns. So, Mr. Posey, I want to particularly thank you for coming and saying what you did. That was very helpful. And to the neighbors for making this about the case and about being good neighbors. Aye.
Fish.
I want to just start by saying that when we do these land use proceedings, they're heavily prescribed. We have a very outstanding counsel who walks us through what we can and can't do. There are clear roles assigned to people. And I think the council on whole, and I'm speaking over a 10-year period, does some of its best work because we come to these without judgment. In fact, we are required to make disclosures that other than the written materials, we haven't visited the site, we haven't had ex parte communications, we haven't engaged in any behavior which in any way prejudices us, and I mean that in the non-racial way, but biases us in terms of the outcome of these hearings. So this is truly a fair fight where we listen to both sides and we try to get to the right outcome. Now, today was a little unusual because we had 13 people testifying on one side and none on the other. And frankly, Mr. Burse, I think your case would have been stronger had your son been here. But I have detected throughout your testimony that you've shifted the responsibility or the focus to your son, to a management agent, to the tenants, to Airbnb, to others. I have not, sir, with all due respect, sensed an accepting of responsibility by you as the owner for this. And I've grown weary of the way these new companies in the so-called sharing economy, which is a terrible misnomer, have come into our community and have flagrantly violated our rules and our norms. 70 to 80% of Airbnbs in our city are illegal because the owner refuses to even take the modest step of getting a business license and or a safety inspection, which after all is exclusively designed to make sure that the guest is safe. Exclusively designed that a visitor to this city is safe while they're visiting the Rose City. And with our friends at Lyft and Uber poised to take another run at preempting the right, the basic right of the city of Portland to even regulate those industries through a legislative end run, I think it speaks volume about what we are up against. But this is one of the most egregious cases that's come before the council during my tenure. And I think we have to send a strong statement of disapproval of the behavior of the owner. And if we cannot enforce a modest requirement of for 270 days there being an occupant who is responsible for the well-being of the guests and is accountable to the neighborhood, because that's the other piece of this, God help us if we can't enforce such a modest requirement, which clearly has not been met in this case. I believe there is substantial evidence of past and current and recurring violations that require this council take a bold step. And I am pleased to support my colleague's motion. Aye.
Wheeler.
Well, I try to boil all of this down to its essential elements. And the essential elements from my perspective based on the record are these. Number one, a conditional use permit was extended. That permit gives the owner privileges. That permit comes with conditions. The hearings officer documented repeated failure to meet those conditions. You acknowledge that you have failed to meet those conditions. You failed to address those conditions even when given the opportunity to do so, apparently repeatedly. Therefore, I vote for the motion to deny the appeal, uphold the hearings officer decision, and revoke the conditional use permit. I vote aye on this tentative vote. And now the question is, when do we adopt the findings and take the final vote?
So Commissioner Fish had requested findings back in 3 weeks. We think that is this 18th of September, and I think Carla and I had talked about that possibly working.
Right, it would be 10:45. On September 18th.
10:45 a.m. Mm-hmm. September 14th?
18th,
I'm sorry, Carla. And that's time certain?
Correct.
Commissioner Fritz?
I just wanted to thank staff for all of your work on this. I know that the enforcement and indeed the whole Airbnb, the short-term rental, is fraught with challenges. And I think you did an exemplary job of getting us the information that we needed to make this decision. Thank you also to everybody who took time out of your days to come here.
We're adjourned.